Hello, America, and all of our listeners all around the world. You're listening to yet another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I'm your host and host, Brandon Perkins. Joining me, as always, is Chris Soloci. Say hi to the good people, Chris.
Hello.
Yeah, so it is March 23rd, 2024, when we are recording this. We are very much deep into spring now, and getting incredibly close to rolling over into April. And the pollen is just getting worse. I don't think people understand when you live down in the South, you basically have pollen bait down here basically comes in like three phases, because it's not just one tree that, you know, the pollen doesn't just happen all at once. Pine trees are usually the ones that start doing it first, then the cherry blossom trees, then the pecan trees, and you know, they all happen like right after another, and it's just, it's fucking miserable. Up until, you know, we get around to mid to late April when the pollen finally subsides. But yeah, so as you can imagine, I have basically been going around going because my nose keeps getting all stopped up with shit. But other than that, what do we got? Well, among other things, former President Trump is shit out of luck financially. We got a group of World War II people that are finally getting their public recognition and congressional gold medals. We got a funding package that was passed that'll be lasting until September, because again, we got to keep kicking the can down the road. We got some really stupid shit happening in Alabama, because of course it's Alabama. We got some news about the royal family. And, oh yeah, the U.S. has finally banned the most common form of asbestos that is still in use. Yeah, I bet you didn't know that they were still using asbestos in some things. Yeah, we were. But we got all that and more, of course, a bunch of entertainment stuff to talk about. And a certain clothing company finally going out of business. So, yeah, we got all that and more on this week's episode of Let's Weekend. But to start us off, as always, we talk about all the things we've been doing up to this point this week, as is tradition. As also as tradition, we start with Chris. Chris, what have you been doing this week?
Yeah, I've been doing a lot of work this week. Mm-hmm. So not a ton of time for things, though I have been able to watch some stuff. I managed to get to the movie theater to watch Dune Part 2 mm-hmm. On Wednesday, which was pretty good. Mm-hmm. Not really a hugely surprising thing. Yeah. The story's kind of went where I thought it would go. Mm. And even like the few surprises they try to throw in there kind of just get tossed aside as like, yeah, show. So what? Let's go on, you know, mm-hmm. kind of thing. So, yeah, fun time.
Yep.
Just not a ton of like huge revelations or anything to it.
Yeah.
And it seems like we're not going to get a third one of those for a while. Mm-hmm. At least a few more years, if that soon. So mm-hmm. That seems like that's going to be it for the Dune movies for a good bit.
Yeah. You got to wait until Dune Messiah. And that's going to be a little while.
Yeah. So yeah, there's that. The other thing I watched that came out this week was Sandland. Mm-hmm. They put that out on Hulu.
Yep.
7 episodes. I think it's right before they start like a second like wave of episodes. So mm-hmm. I'm curious to see more of that. But yeah, very fun show. If you don't know the general premise, this guy named Ral teams up with two demons to mm-hmm. try to find the legendary spring that you know, is purported to have, you know, a huge amount of water that, you know, could save mm-hmm. Both of their communities mm-hmm. as they are, you know, in this place called Sandland that is just kind of an endless desert that used to have water, but no longer does. So they kind of go on this adventure and, you know, try to find find out the reasons behind everything that's been going on. So
yeah,
ends in a pretty neat place sort of after that whole arc is kind of settled, and as they're kind of figuring out what's next, this whole other thing pops up. So curious to see that, but yeah, looks really nice. No English dub for this at the moment, so it's just Japanese dub, so you have to check that out. But yeah, that's very good. Then also been watching more Dragon Ball. Finished up the first part of the Red Ribbon arc with the tower, as Goku has beaten everybody in it, including a big giant monster that seems near indestructible, until Goku figures out one other thing that could potentially solve that. And yeah, still going with that. Basically, I'm at the point where Goku is going back to find Bulma because the Dragon Ball radar has broken. And so he's trying to figure out what's going on there. So yeah, that's all I've been watching for this week. For things I've been playing, I've been playing more MLB The Show 24. Playing with my closer in the Road to the Show mode that is female. She has managed to get called up to the AAA level team.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where I'm stuck at for a bit. I had having some ups and downs. So I think I just need to kind of grind a bit and get the stats up. I'm doing pretty well stat wise, but kind of at a point where I've been blowing some attempts at saves and just not getting strikeouts as much as I was, just partly due to the dynamic difficulty, but yeah, kind of trying to get over this hump here. But yeah, that's been fun still. And Balatro, been playing more Balatro. I've gotten a few more attempts at beating the boss on Anti-8, but still have not gotten over that hump. So that's been the frustrating thing, but still making a go at it. I think I've got about 25 hours into it now, so still making my way. And yeah, that's been pretty much it for me. So, Brandon, what have you been doing?
Well, I finished Unicorn Overlord last night, and that game, holy shit, did that game become so freaking hard towards the end. They really do pull out just all the fucking stops to make you work for this ending. The last guy that you're going up against, he can only be killed if you have a couple of specific things equipped. And the thing is, the actual battle against him happens immediately after the fight that you previously had just finished, which was also extremely difficult. And on top of that, you have to, there's like all these side quests you also have to do to make sure that you're ready to do it before you can do this part of the game. Because this is like the true golden ending. There's a other ending that you can do that will end the game after you finish the previous ending, but it's not like, it's not really the way the game is supposed to end. And yeah, it is. It's crazy. The guy that you're fighting, he just keeps going on and on and on until you finally get to the point where you have like all the proper stuff equipped, and then you can finally kill him. But even then, that's really difficult because he takes forever, like so many of your stamina points and fighting with him just to get his life down to the point that you can actually kill him. I seriously went through like half of my army trying to kill this guy. And let's just say, like, they build him up as a real seriously terrifying badass, and they were 100% right. But yeah, I finally fucking finished the game, and yeah, this is definitely going to be on my game of the year, games of the year list for sure. This game was legitimately incredible. If you like these types of games, if you like, you know, simulation RPGs, you have to play this. Like, there is no excuse. It was incredible, and I will praise this game to anyone that'll ask. But with that done, that meant I had an enormous gaming hole that had to be filled. So I decided to buy, well, I said I bought one of these. The other came with my you know, with my PlayStation Plus account. The first one is The Ascent, which is the one that came with my account. And it's basically a top-down sci-fi Diablo is more or less how you would describe the game. And surprisingly enough, it's actually really pretty fun. It's not, like, absolutely perfect or anything. There's some obvious, like, issues with the fact that all the environments are kind of samey-looking, which makes sense because you're, you know, it mostly all takes place on a giant, like, arcology. On like some desert world that's basically just it's cyberpunk central. You know what you're in for. And yeah, it's fun. I'm actually liking it. I'm liking the lore. The combat is challenging. But that's about it with that. And then on top of that, I went and bought a copy of The Invincible, which is, I think we might have talked about this game a few times. It's a game from a Polish studio that's based on Stanisław Lem's novel of the same name. And basically, you are a cosmonaut who is on a research ship that's orbiting a planet that, what you find out, you're actually not supposed to be there. It's the wrong planet you were supposed to go to. But at some point, you and your crew decide to go down there to try and, you know, explore, get some samples, do some studies. And then you end up waking up at the start of the game in the middle of like a desert area, having no idea what just happened and trying to find out like what the hell is going on. And right off the bat, I'll tell you, there is no other game I've ever played that simulates the feel of being an astronaut on a barren wasteland of a planet better than this one has. Like, you legitimately, the way this game is constructed, you feel like you are like on the surface of Mars or whatever. You fortunately don't have to worry about anything like oxygen, but you do have to worry about things like, you know, getting tears in your suit or whatever, which, I mean, it's not literally a play mechanic, but the way that you have to move and traverse the area, it's like, yeah, obviously they can't like just do big jumps or whatever. That would be stupid. They have to like climb and things like that. Be careful not accidentally injure themselves. Also the like tech that they made for this game, for the universe in this game, because it's kind of like a retro future type thing, is actually really cool. It all looks like really functional and it's like well designed. Like one of the major things that you're using in this game is called a tracker, and it's, you know, it's kind of like your radar or your HUD type thing, except it's like this little box that's got like this this concentric circles of that are made up of lights, and when you're trying to find someone, you know, they're, how far they are or how close they are is told by, you know, where the light in the circle is. There's also another one that's like a radar screen that's on the ship that you go in. And it's like the way this game conveys its story is actually really cool. That said, I will just tell you right off the bat, the character models in this game suck. They're very, not very expressive. They're very robotic. There was a lot, I noticed a lot of clipping involved. It's very janky, but otherwise I'm definitely liking it. I mean, really nothing other than that, not much else, you know, books, still doing reading as I usually do. I got two new ones that are over on my table right now that came in today. And yeah, just dealing with all the shitty, awful pollen, which is just, oh, it sucks. It sucks. I hate this fucking time of year. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. And you would think like, oh, there was some rain the other day. That'll help. No, all rain does is stir it up, makes it freaking worse. But yeah, that's what I've been doing. So, Chris, you got anything you want to add before we move on?
Nope.
No? Okay, then. Well, then, it's now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And I've talked a bunch about spicy food on here a lot because I like spicy food, you know? Like, I'm not like a masochist who likes to eat the hottest thing I can get a hand on because I'm, you know, like some dude who's like a recovering drug addict or something. I like spicy, but to me, spicy food has to be, you know, it has to have flavor. You know what I mean? Too much spiciness will just wreck the flavor of something. But the thing is that if you're one of those people who wants to like try the different cuisines of the world, you know, all the different foods and stuff, spice tolerance is kind of a something you have to build up like as a requirement, because there's a lot of like cuisines in the world where spicy is like the base level of just about everything that they make. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like if you try to go to India, for example, you know, spicy is everywhere. You know, it's not all of it. You know, not all of it is spicy. They've got sweets and stuff like that. And they also have stuff that's just perfectly, you know, I'm not going to say bland, but it's not, you know, overly seasoned or anything. But it's still a pretty big part of their food culture. And then you go to like neighboring countries like Indonesia or Thailand. Those places are notorious for their food just straight up scorching the inside of your mouth if you're not prepared for it. But I did a little research and I found out there's actually two countries in the world, two countries that can argue for the title of having the spiciest cuisine on the planet. They're both entirely different from each other. They're both in completely different parts of the world. Their cultures have very little in common. Even the way that they use chilies over there is different. But they both share the fact that their food is so, like, basically spicy as a base level that it will overpower anyone who isn't used to it. And I'll tell you what those two countries this week are. Okay, so the first one that can more or less vie for that title of spiciest cuisine in the world is Ethiopia. Ethiopia is a country that embraces spice the way that some cultures embrace salt and pepper. Anybody who's never had Ethiopian food before, a meal in Ethiopia is very unique and actually really cool because they don't really use utensils that much. There's very little cleanup involved. Basically, what they do is they take this enormous sort of sourdough flatbread that is called... I'm trying to remember what it's called because there's a specific name for it. Injera. It's this enormous sourdough flatbread that they lay out on a tray. And with that bread basically acts as a plate. And they put all the various foods that they're going to put on top of it, the vegetables, the pickles, the stews and stuff. And we'll be getting to the stews, don't worry. And then they serve it with rolls of more injera. And basically you tear off pieces of that injera and then just, you know, pick up portions with it and eat the whole thing. And, you know, after all the stuff on the top is gone, you just eat the rest of the injera and that's it. Very little cleanup involved. A lot of it is very nutritious. And because in Ethiopia, the Ethiopian Orthodox Church has like a lot of fast days that they have to abide by. Enormous chunk of it is vegan. So you can get an amazing flavored meal in Ethiopia and not eat one drop of meat or meat byproducts or meat or animal related products in the whole meal. It's kind of amazing. But where their reputation for spice comes from those stews. And these stews are intensely spiced. They have two basic stews that you can rely on that are more or less that are the most famous. One is called Tibbs or Doro Tibbs. It's a spicy stew that's usually made with beef. It doesn't have to be beef. Sometimes it's lamb. that's sauteed in butter or oil and then simmered with onions, garlic, rosemary, and of course, chilies. Especially, they use something called berber, which is a spice and chili powder mix that uses the most intense type of African chilies that grow on the continent. These are like scorching hot. But the unique thing about Ethiopian food is that even though the food is really spicy, they don't believe, they try to make up for it with really amazing flavor. Ethiopian food is some of the most delicious, flavorful things you will ever taste. And tibs are just one of them. The other one, probably the most famous dish that Ethiopia has, is dorowat, which is a spicy chicken stew that's made with chicken thighs that's cooked in a spicy mixture of, again, berber, more garlic and ginger, diced onions, and seasoned butter. They'll also add a hard-boiled egg or two into the mixture afterwards. Usually they'll have it with a side of collard greens or a salty cheese. And again, really powerful shit. It is delicious, amazing stuff, and it will scorch the inside of your mouth. So yeah, that's Ethiopia. The other country that can vie for the title of most spiciest cuisine, the one that you probably would not expect because it's not really a country you would think of that much, but it is arguably the only other country on earth that can vie for it. And that is the country of Bhutan. Bhutan is a landlocked Asian country that is situated snugly in the Himalayas between India and China. It's a very mountainous region. Obviously, it's in the Himalayas. And the people who live there are, well, their culture is heavily inspired by, like, the people of the steppes, as you can probably imagine. There's lots of yak-related stuff. They use yak meat and yak milk and use, you know, yak byproducts for a lot of their food. The other thing that they love is chili peppers. And they don't use chili peppers the way that other cultures do. Other cultures use chili peppers as a seasoning, you know? They'll use it for something to season a sauce or a dish or a dip or something like that. No. Not the Bhutanese. The Bhutanese use chili peppers the way other cultures use vegetables, because they consider the chili pepper a vegetable, and they use it as a vegetable. And because of that, pretty much any dish that you eat in Bhutan is going to be heavy on the chili peppers, because that is one of their main vegetables. And the one dish in Bhutan that exemplifies this, the dish that is their national dish, the thing that they present to foreigners and visitors and tourists who come to Bhutan to try and learn what Bhutan is all about, is a little dish called emadashi. And emadashi is literally a stew or a soup that is made primarily with chili peppers and yak cheese, served with a side of brown rice. That's it. It's not terribly complicated, but it is intensely flavorful, and it is insanely hot. It is arguably the single spiciest national dish on the planet. It is so hot that it can bring regular spice level lovers to a coughing, crying mess. And yet, basically anybody who tries it is like, you know, it hurts, but God, it tastes so good. And it does, apparently. It's delicious. It's like when CNN did one of their, you know, their like 100 most delicious foods in the world lists, emadashi was close to the top 20. So yeah, those are the two cultures that could arguably go for the title of hottest food in the world: Ethiopia and the Kingdom of Bhutan. And that has been yet another installment of Brandon's Random Factoid. So yeah, with that, it is now time to move on to the show proper. As always with the show proper, we start off with the assholes of the week. And our first asshole of the week is, of course, former President Donald J. Trump. His lawyers have said that Trump cannot get a loan to cover the $450 million bond needed to appeal his New York fraud case.
Yeah.
Which means he's probably going to have to start selling off his assets, probably all the shit in New York.
Yeah, let's see here. It'll be, I think they said they approached 30 companies, but getting a bond was practical impossibility because they need $1 billion in cash.
Yeah, and also because, you know, Trump has a reputation.
Yeah.
He famously stiffs all of his creditors. It's like, it's almost part of his brand.
Yeah. People that give out loans do not like risks.
Mm-hmm.
And Trump is as big of a risk because this is for getting an appeal for this.
Yep.
That's basically it. It's basically like you have to put up the money if you're going to appeal so that if, you know, you lose, then you're guaranteed to have the money ready.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's it's not a thing that most loan people are going to really consider.
Nope.
This kind of scale.
Yep.
Of thing. But yeah, it's like, and he's been saying, you know, before and even after, like, he's got plenty of money, but that's not really the truth. News organizations have estimated that he has about $300 million in liquid assets.
Yeah.
But he's already had to set aside $100 million or so to put up a bond to pay the verdict in the Eugene Carroll civil case.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of his money is largely tied up in buildings and golf courses.
Mm-hmm.
While he could sell a property, that can't happen right away. Yeah, Trump said Tuesday that would be a fire sale, though he said many times during the trial he could always find a buyer to pay top dollar.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the other thing that's popped up lately is the notion that he could put up Truth Social for a public IPO.
Mm-hmm.
That's, I think, the really ambitious people think could make like $3 billion, but I don't know that that's
likely. Yeah.
So there could be an infusion of money from that, but yeah. And yeah, this is the deadline's Monday for this. He does not have to necessarily pay it right away, but if he is going to appeal, that's a quick deadline here to do it. And yeah, I don't know that he is going to end up doing it. But yeah, when he does have to pay up, they will be able to access his bank accounts. They say here, let's see. The entire trial was effectively a roadmap to his financial assets. She can now send out a sheriff or marshal of the city of New York to go walk into a financial institution, holding what's known as an execution, and empty his bank account short of $3,000, which is the statutory floor.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they acknowledge that Trump has said he doesn't have $450 million in the bank in cash. But if he wants to stave off enforcement, he needs to find a way to raise it. And I believe they also found it in the new deal with the RNC for funding, where essentially all RNC money would be going to him first. And it's like, oh, are Republicans going to finally figure out if trickle-down economics work by Trump taking all the money for his own legal needs and leaving them with nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he's got a fun time here.
Yeah. And then we got this just gross story. Six former deputies from the state of Mississippi were sentenced to prison for torturing two black men. This happened, I think, last year, didn't it?
Yeah, January 2023.
Yeah, so early last year.
Yeah, there were these. Yeah, somebody called in that there were two black men staying with a white woman at a house, and the one of these cops, you know, recruited a bunch of others that were sort of were part of a group they called the Goon Squad.
Yep.
And they decided to go and just torture these guys, beat them up, did all sorts of awful shit to them, and under this guise of, you know, I don't know, some racist shit, because they didn't have a warrant or anything to raid this house and do all this. So, but luckily they've all gotten sentences, all six people. Let's see. Brett McAlpin has been sentenced to more than 27 years in federal prison for his part. Let's see. The other one here, Joshua Hartfield, got 10 years. Earlier in the week, they had four others that got sentenced. Christian Dedman to 40 years. Mm. The stiffest sentence, Hunter Elward to 20 years. Daniel Opdyke and Lieutenant Jeffrey Middleton to 17.5 years each. Mm. So, yeah, good riddance to all of these pieces of shit.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll learn that that being a cop is not for them to do whatever the hell they want.
Yeah. 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 So yeah, fuck those guys. I hope they rot. Yeah, so those were our assholes of the week. Fortunately, we do have some heroes of the week to get that bad taste out of our mouths. Our first hero of the week is the first human transplant of a genetically modified pig kidney has been successfully performed.
Yeah.
Which is, that is amazing news, actually.
Yeah.
Let's just hope it takes.
Yeah. They had the guy from Massachusetts receive the organ on last Saturday in a 4-hour procedure. He was recovering well and is expected to be discharged by today.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they have done this. They're hoping to do this so they can provide kidneys, livers, hearts, and other organs to help alleviate the shortage of organs for people who need transplants.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's great news.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, thank goodness. Yeah, that I hope this becomes something that'll be more accessible in short time. But yeah. And now for something that's also amazing. The so-called Ghost Army from World War II has been given their first public recognition with congressional gold medals.
Yeah. This was a group of people in the army. They were not necessarily soldiers. They were recruited because they had other abilities to essentially create, you know, phony tanks, fake uniforms, spread rumors, and other sort of special effects and such to deceive the Germans during World War II and diverting attention from, you know, other units that were planning, you know, different attacks and whatnot. They were composed of up to like 1,000 people, I think. Made up of more than 1,000 troops, though could simulate 2 troops totaling some 30,000 service members, according to the National World War II Museum. There are just 7 surviving members now scattered across the country.
Mm-hmm.
But they had, I think, 3 at this event.
Mm-hmm.
Getting congressional gold medals, the highest honor Congress can bestow.
Mm-hmm.
3 of them came to the U.S. Capitol to accept the award, surrounded by military and congressional leaders, lawmakers from both parties, and relatives of Ghost Army members.
Mm.
So that was great to see. And yeah, this, they do run down like some of these people here, the ones that were at the event, 100-year-old Bernard Bluestein, who joined the visual deception unit from the Cleveland Institute of Art, went on to pursue a career in industrial design.
Mm.
There's 99-year-old John Christman, who served as a demolition specialist, and 100-year-old Seymour Nusenbaum, an avid stamp collector, who joined the Army from the Pratt Institute. He helped make counterfeit patches worn by the unit and worked in package design for many years after the war.
Mm-hmm.
They had a number of other people as well. So yeah, this is a great honor for these people. And yeah, you can definitely read more here as they wrote a lot about the Ghost Army and the different things they did and all that. And yeah, finding ways for more people to help out in the war that didn't have to necessarily be soldiers themselves. So yeah, there you go.
Yeah. All right, so that is the end of the show proper, and now we move on to the proper show proper. And our first story for the night is that Congress and President Biden have both passed a $1.2 trillion funding package to last until September 30th. So yeah, we averted another government shutdown, but once again, we're kicking the can down the fucking road.
Well, that's the end of the fiscal year, so they kind of have to do it that way.
Yeah, but
partly when the new one starts, that they have to work on that.
Yeah.
And yeah, sort of as a part of this, there are, you know, Marjorie Taylor Greene and some of them are filing a motion to remove Speaker Mike Johnson, which so far doesn't seem like it's going anywhere. But yeah, this bipartisan funding bill seems to do mostly good things. So there, I believe there's more funding for Israel and some of the shit like that. Yeah, halts funding for the UNWRA, the United Nations agency that provides aid to Palestinians, until March of 2025. And this comes after, Israel alleged that a dozen UNWRA staffers took part in Hamas's attack, which I'm going to guess probably didn't happen, much like most of the things Israel claimed. But yeah, there's $1 billion increase for child care and early learning programs, including $12 billion for the Head Start program. Let's see, Republicans are happy that there's an increase in the number of ICE detention beds and border agents and cutting funding to NGOs. Also trumpeting a provision that prevents the Consumer Product Safety Commission from banning gas stoves and another that prevents diplomatic facilities from flying flags that aren't official U.S. flags.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming that's LGBTQ flags.
Yeah.
And the banning gas stoves thing is not a real thing that was happening.
Yeah.
That was just some bullshit they made. It's like a, or no, it's not like a fake thing. It's a thing that was being considered, but much like any sort of attempt to say like, maybe we should look at other sources of meat than beef and that, they're like, no, you can't take my steaks away. And it's like, yeah, there's a lot of shit going on with that. So yeah, and I got some other details here, but yeah. Things are going to keep going for a while longer.
Yeah. So that happened. And now for some more bullshit. The governor of Alabama, Kay Ivey, signed a bill that bans state funding of DEI programs. Because, again, this is the new, you know, pet bullshit they're going with. You know, first it was the bathroom thing. Then it was critical race theory. And it was stuff about BLM. And now it's DEI. You know.
Yeah, and this is, from what I've seen, not a very well written bill.
Of course it isn't, because it's going against something that's largely bullshit.
Yeah, and the basic core thing of this, it'll impose restrictions around what it calls 8 divisive concepts dealing with race and personal identity. It also requires public colleges to designate bathrooms for use by individuals based on their biological sex. Takes effect on October 1st. College students who oppose the bill have organized protests against it, including a large rally at the state house earlier this month. But the Republicans have full control of all three parts of their legislature, so
yeah,
it doesn't really matter for that stuff. But yeah, this leads to a couple of weird things. One, that the state government has a DEI branch there.
Yeah.
But they had to write in a thing at the end to basically say, but this doesn't, you know, shut down those kind of programs. Because that was a thing that, you know, Republicans instituted. So their own logic here is just contradictory.
Yeah.
On this stuff. And I believe, I'm not sure people have pushed through this to its logical extent, but this would essentially suggest that Alabama and Auburn would no longer be allowed to play college sports because the NCAA requires, you know, DEI programs tied to that stuff. So
yeah,
that makes for some questionable stuff there. We'll see if people push them on that and challenge this bill. So we'll have to see what this ends up doing in the end, but it seems mostly a way to just annoy people for a lot of reasons. So yeah, we'll have to see what else, but they seem to be one of the first to push through this stuff. So yeah,
yeah,
people are saying like potential 14th Amendment violation, that kind of stuff. So I assume it's going to get challenged, and we'll see how that goes.
It almost certainly will get challenged. Then we have this story. The Princess of Wales, Kate Middleton, has announced that she has cancer and is undergoing treatment.
Yeah. This is a weird end to a saga where she has been out of the public eye for past few months.
Mm-hmm.
And they posted a photo of her with the kids that people figured out pretty quickly was Photoshopped.
Yeah.
And then the royal family started doing weird PR claiming like she did it. She did the Photoshopping.
Yeah.
And that she was like playing around with Photoshop or whatever. And it's like, you guys are making whatever's happening here much worse.
Yeah.
By just not being open with people.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, after, letting people sort of fuck around with conspiracy theories and jokes and memes for the last month or two.
Yeah.
They finally came out with this video here, and it's like, yeah, that makes sense for why she hasn't been around. The PR team has not done a good job at all with any of this.
Nope.
Because, if you're wondering why they need to come out with this, they are a public, they are paid with tax-funded money, and, this kind of stuff would need to be disclosed as to, what they're doing with money and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, King Charles is also undergoing treatment now.
Yep.
For his own cancers. I think it's skin cancer that he has.
Mm-hmm.
I think she has something abdominal.
Yeah.
That she had major abdominal surgery in January.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't know like the type or stage or whatever, but I don't think we necessarily need that much detail, but yeah.
No.
Oh, if she makes it through.
Mm-hmm.
Just fine. But yeah, the Kensington Palace just fucked up mm-hmm. everything for this. So there's like a bunch of people like apologizing for it. And it's like, you didn't really need to apologize because I think most people were making fun mm-hmm. of the situation that the palace may put everybody through
mm-hmm.
and just making this such a weird situation versus, coming out early on being like, this was a procedure done to deal with cancer. And then people were like, oh, okay. And moved on. So,
mm-hmm.
but yeah, there you go.
Yeah. And then we know that we got this week. The United States has officially, finally banned the most common form of asbestos still being used.
Yeah. After decades of pushback from the industry. So,
yep.
Finally winning over them, the EPA.
Yeah. Now,
so Monday is banning the most common form of asbestos, a cancer-causing substance mm-hmm. that's linked to the death of tens of thousands of Americans every year.
Yep.
There's more than 50 other countries that have already outlawed the substance.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, as things tend to go around here, the industry has a lot more power pushing back mm-hmm. on this stuff. Because it's used in so many things.
Yep.
Not only just like insulation, but also a lot of manufacturing processes and even mm-hmm. some consumer goods. So yeah, this is the, what's the specific one here that it's called? Chrysotile asbestos.
Yeah.
Which I don't know particularly which that there's even that many other versions, but yeah. Good.
Yeah.
It's like the notion that we still have lead pipes and lead paint on, in and around buildings all over the country still.
Oh yeah.
This is the kind of shit that happens because there's so much stuff going on around this country.
Yeah.
We're a huge country with a lot of space.
The lead thing is still like a problem down south here because, if you think that, like the getting the county to do anything in this part of the country is a goddamn nightmare.
Yeah, it's like getting funding just to make sure they can fix roads is a fucking nightmare, much less things that affect people's ability to lead a normal life.
Mm-hmm.
We couldn't even deal with COVID correctly, much less things that aren't actively affecting you every single day.
Oh, yeah.
So
it's a fucking nightmare. Yeah.
That's why this is because you got lots of people that think because they did the thing at one point that it has to keep being allowed versus getting rid of it because we found out, oh no, this is actually really bad for everybody.
Yeah. Stubborn traditionalism. That's basically what defines people down here.
Yeah.
But yeah. So yeah, that's good to hear. And then we had this thing fucking happen. I think this happened, I think yesterday? Was it either yesterday or the day before? There was this concert that was happening in Moscow in Russia. And then this huge terrorist attack happened. It ended up killing 133 people and injuring a bunch more. And apparently ISIS are the ones who were claiming credit for it.
Yeah. ISIS-K, or the Islamic State Khorasan province.
Yeah.
That has taken responsibility. As much as if they hadn't, I assume Russia would have tried to be like, oh, this seems like what Ukraine would do.
Yeah.
We should, you know, have condemnation of Ukraine. It's like, no.
Nope.
Luckily, a group came out and took credit for this, so that avenue can't really be done. But yeah, awful situation. 133 people, 145 injured.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, fire broke out with flames visible from miles away. Mm-hmm. While people were, I think, going to a rock concert. I think it was a rock band that was there.
Yep.
So yeah. Yeah, the rock band Picnic.
Yep.
Yeah, when several gunmen in military fatigues entered, shot up the place, and then yeah, started fires and all that stuff. So there you go. Pretty simple thing there.
Mm-hmm. Pretty awful.
Yeah.
But yeah. Originally when I heard this, my first wasn't even ISIS. It was like Chechen separatists. Because Chechnya, there's been like Russia pretty much ever since the fall of the Soviet Union has been dealing with like Chechen terrorists pretty much for decades. Even when Putin was still during Putin's tenure. So yeah, turns out it was ISIS. So there you go.
Yeah, this territory is, let's see, comprised of northeastern Iran, parts of Afghanistan, and southern parts of Central Asia.
Yeah.
So a good bit of the Middle East there.
Yeah, once you start getting to that part of when it starts like bleeding over from the Middle East into, you know, to that part of, I guess, Eurasia, I guess you'd call it. Yeah, it starts getting messy. But yeah, so then we got this next story. Joann Fabrics has filed for bankruptcy.
Yeah, and this is an interesting story because it is another, they're not going to be shutting down or anything.
Yeah.
For the time being, they're sort of restructuring their debts and all that.
Oh, yeah.
Keeping stores and the website open and all that. But mm-hmm. This is partly due to them being purchased by a private equity firm about 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess in that process, you can take out a loan to cover the cost for that and then just put that loan as debt on the company.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a thing that essentially sunk Joann Fabrics.
Yeah.
They also went public like 2 years ago and that went well for a few months and then just the stock price sunk.
Yep.
Shortly after. And now this, as part of all this, they are going to be delisted from the NASDAQ stock exchange. So
yeah,
that went poorly as a means of raising more money to cover these debts. And
yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of a very shitty thing that's, private equity firms can do to the businesses they buy.
Yep.
Because essentially they can, you know, restructure this debt and have to pay even less of it.
Yep.
And that's legal somehow.
Mm-hmm. 100% legal.
Yeah. And they were one of the businesses that did very well early on in COVID because it's like, oh, here's something you can do at home. Pretty constructive, you know, thing to, you know, get some creativity out of you.
Yeah.
Doing your knitting, your sewing, your crocheting, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the private equity and the infinite growth capitalism just took them down.
Yep.
And another thing I found out is they were founded here in Ohio, around Cleveland. So that was a bit of a surprise.
Yeah.
Which makes sense why there's a bunch around here.
Yeah. Something else I also found out recently about Cleveland. That's where Chef Boyardee started his company.
Yeah.
His real name was Hector Boyardee, but yeah.
Yeah. And it's like there's the paint company, I forget what which one it was, is founded in Cleveland. That is, you know, turns out being a founding, you know, not a founding state in the U.S., but an early one.
Yeah.
A lot of businesses can set up there early on.
Yeah.
Versus like, you know, once you find out that set up in California or whatever,
mm-hmm.
those are all like recent in the last like 40, 50 years.
Yeah.
A lot of them. But yeah.
Yeah, it's true. So yeah. Then we have this story. The United States Department of Justice has filed an antitrust lawsuit against Apple over its monopoly with the iPhone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I was like, wait, there's a monopoly? Like, I thought droids were still a thing.
Yeah, but Apple, I think, has like a 60% market share here, but I think they're also yeah. going after a lot of the practices they have here.
Mm-hmm.
Saying, let's see, each step in Apple's course of conduct built and reinforced the moat around its smartphone monopoly.
Yeah.
The government said in its 88-page lawsuit.
Yeah.
The cumulative effect of this course of conduct has been to maintain and entrench Apple's smartphone monopoly at the expense of the users, developers, and other third parties who help make the iPhone what it is today.
Yeah.
And yeah, they claim that they engaged in anti-competitive conduct, including blocking cross-platform messaging apps, limiting third-party wallet and smartwatch compatibility, disrupting non-app store programs and cloud streaming services, which are all things they've done.
Yep.
I guess until pretty recently, Microsoft hasn't been able to really do an xCloud app because they would be required to put a separate app for each game. And get that all rated, and that's like a ridiculous amount of work for like 100 or 200 games.
Flood
the app store for that.
Mm-hmm.
All your streaming services, your Netflixes, Hulu, Maxes, your Spotifys aren't allowed to put in the app like, hey, if you want a cheaper monthly fee for using this, you should go to the website. Mm. They're not allowed to do that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
because if you're getting it on Apple, you're likely getting a higher monthly fee because they're including the Apple tax that they have to pay with that.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're only paying for it with your Apple wallet, you're probably paying more. That kind of stuff, you know, not allowing you to have better smartwatch compatibility with all the third party stuff and mm-hmm. wallets. They want you to use the Apple versions.
Yeah.
Instead. And like the messaging app thing has been a thing for a while where like the green messages. Mm-hmm. It's like you're on an Android. Mm-hmm. Like kids get bullied if they don't have the blue ones. Mm-hmm. That kind of thing. It's very stupid, but it's the thing that's, you know, Apple's essentially allowed to perpetuate.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's only been pretty recent that Apple's been more interested in actually having compatibility with the standards that Apple or that Android has.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, your messages don't look different. But yeah, this is seeking to get Apple to change their ways.
Mm-hmm.
Much like the EU has been doing with them. So yeah, we'll see if this goes well and maybe gets Apple to make some better changes for consumers.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they just stopped doing the thing where, you know, they required you to buy like a separate, like, you know, plug-in that it only works for their particular brand. So,
yeah.
Yeah. And next up, another story, and we're going now into the entertainment portion of the show. The Neverending Story is being adapted for new movies. I mean, we've both seen the original Neverending Story movie, haven't we?
Yeah, and it's fucked up.
Oh, well, I mean, it was the early 80s. All kids' movies back then were fucked up. All of them. Every single one of them, just without anything. Not just the Neverending Story. You also had, you know, Return to Oz, Goonies, And that's just live action movies.
Yeah. But it's like the nothing.
Yeah.
This fucking freaky ass wolf that they don't show very much because it looks goofy.
Yeah.
The lights.
Yeah.
The sad swamp that the horse drowns in because he just gets depressed.
Uh-huh.
That's fucked up.
Artax, no.
Yeah. It's like, the fucking Scar kid just have the horse drown because he's just depressed and doesn't want to go anywhere.
Yeah. That's the early 80s for you. They did not give a fuck.
It's like, that shit's, I assume, is in the book. I haven't read it because why the fuck would I read it when I already saw the movie?
It is. And here's the thing. The movie only does the first half of the book.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the book, the other half of the book is him, you know, coming to terms with being the new ruler of Fantasia. And spoiler alert, he fucks it up very badly. Because he's a kid. That's
the second one? The second movie?
I've never seen the second movie.
Yeah, that's where he meets the princess, I think.
No, he meets the princess at the end of the first movie. Remember?
Yeah, but I mean, I think it's the whole thing with the boats and all that, or is that the end of the first one? It's been a while since I've seen
it. It's been a while. I also have never seen the first movie. I've seen the first movie. I've never seen the second one.
And the first one has the two like Egyptian statues that zap people.
Yep. That was my topless. That was my favorite part of the fucking movie.
Yeah.
And not because of the boobs, but because of the whole, it's like a trap in a video game. And if you don't do it right, you get zapped into things. That was my favorite part of the movie.
Yeah.
Also, that big rock guy, like going around on his giant tricycle. That was cool, too.
Yeah.
The Rock Eater, I think his name was. But,
yeah. Yeah. The second one, he has a whole thing where he's afraid of diving on the diving board. To join the swimming team, which is like, why is he joining the swimming team if he can't dive off the diving board?
Yeah.
Because his fear of heights. Like, why is he doing that? There's other stuff you could do that doesn't involve your fear of heights.
Yeah, seriously.
But he's afraid of this. He takes the book home again. Yeah, here's the childlike empress call out to him for aid.
Yeah.
Yeah, which deals with him doing all this more stuff. He meets a bird-like creature named Nimbly, is reunited with Atreyu in the beautiful Silver City. As the group encounters and escapes from armored giants, Bastion comes to understand the force called the emptiness is spreading across Fantasia.
Yeah. The nothing was sort of like an early English translation from the book. Because the whole point of the nothing is the idea that, you know, once people stop believing in Fantasia, it just sort of starts decaying.
Yeah.
After
an evil sorceress, and then this tri-face. I think this is the thing that's also freaky, is the dude that has three faces that switch around.
Mm-hmm.
Almost like a top, I think.
Yeah.
If I'm remembering correctly, so.
Yeah. There's actually a bunch of stuff in the books that didn't make it into the movies, and I'm not even talking about the second half, too. Because the first book is, despite how that movie is, the first book is actually a little darker. than that movie is in some parts. Definitely. Anybody who's interested, the book is called The Never Ending Story. It was written by a guy named Michael End. You can probably get it at a local bookstore. Give it a shot. It's actually really good. Even if you've seen all the movies, there are parts of it that will still surprise you. So that's happening. Don't know how they're going to be able to top that original movie, though. For a generation of children, that movie is imprinted in our imagination.
the flying dragon.
Yeah,
dude. He dies in one of them. Falcor.
Yep, Falcor.
He dies in one of the movies, the sequels.
Yep. And then we got this bit of news. Wish will debut on Disney Plus April 3rd. Did you see Wish?
No.
You didn't? Me neither. I have not heard good things.
Yeah. It seemed like a standard boilerplate kind of Disney movie.
It also, I've seen clips and there's like parts where it seems like half finished almost.
That happens.
The animation and the coloring and like saturation is like really off in parts. Like, it's weird.
I would assume this version is the fully complete version.
I would hope. Maybe this will end up being the version that's actually, you know, maybe, you know, we'll end up having like another, you know, Encanto situation where the movie ends up like getting good by word of mouth and, you know, Disney manages to get their money back or whatever, but I'm not expecting it.
Yeah.
This was one of Disney's mid ventures. But we'll see. We'll see. So yeah, April 3rd, that I believe is going to be week after next. So I guess we'll see. Next up, Dead Boy Detectives is debuting on Netflix April 25th. This is like an old comic book series that's like related to the Sandman.
Yeah, Neil Gaiman DC series.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be made for HBO Max, but they canceled it at a certain point. Netflix picked it up.
Yeah.
Which fits for them because they have the Sandman series they just did last year. But yeah, this is finally coming out here next month. So that'll be cool. Season one has 8 episodes, so I'll be able to check that out.
Definitely. Sounds neat. All right. And let's see, what else? Yeah, we also got an official trailer for Disney Plus's The Acolyte. This is their new Star Wars story. And as you can expect, the Star Wars fans fucking hated it the moment it showed up.
Yeah,
because they're terrible. Yeah, they hate. For people who claim to be a fan of something, they really hate everything.
Yeah. I feel like that's been the move since the first trailer for episode 7. We're like, there's a black stormtrooper. This is woke. Fuck this shit. Mm-hmm. You know, all the racism that kind of bubbled out. But yeah, this is their first series or movie or whatever going into the High Republic era.
Yep.
Which is sort of the kind of their version of the Old Republic.
Yeah.
Like essentially. So yeah. This is one of those trailers that just has like a few seconds of scenes just back to back to back. So it's kind of hard to get a really good vibe of anything here.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we'll have to see how this goes, but looks neat.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be starting in June 4th, 2-episode premiere on Disney Plus. So yeah, there you go.
And we also got an official trailer for Furiosa, a Mad Max saga. So this is the sort of backstory of the Furiosa character from Mad Max Fury Road.
Yeah. Seems pretty neat. I don't know how this is going to turn out, but yeah. It is nice that they have Chris Hemsworth playing as the bad guy here.
Mm-hmm.
Not a role he does too much
mm-hmm.
For this, but yeah. Looks like it could be neat. So that'll be out May 24th.
Mm.
And yeah, that's... Furiosa, sort of after she's been like taken away from her home, trying to find her way back.
Yeah.
At some point. And yeah, this is like her first encounter with, what's his face, from the last one from Fury Road. I forget the bad guy from that last one, but yeah, they'll show up there. So yeah, more fun, like action spectacle stuff. So
yeah,
that looks cool.
Yeah. And then we got a teaser trailer for Alien Romulus. I saw this trailer. I looked at it. It looks good. I'm not expecting perfection. I mean, let's be honest, those first two movies just cannot be topped. I just don't want it to suck. We've had far too many bad Alien movies at this point. I just want it to be good.
Yeah, when I saw this, I was like, this is like a franchise that has way more middling to bad movies in it than good ones.
Yeah.
Though I've only seen the first two in Prometheus.
Yeah.
Maybe the one after that.
Mm-hmm.
But they need their prey, their predator sort of, not necessarily reboot, but something that has a good vision to it that kind of gets people excited about it again.
Mm-hmm. Because
this could be.
Yeah. I mean, they're trying to go back to the basics with this one, apparently, the way it looks.
Yeah.
Like, they're not trying to do high concept sci-fi here. They're going back to the gritty sort of cyberpunkish horror stuff that the first two movies did.
Yeah. Seems like they're trying to do both of them.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of aliens in this. And
yeah. And you see the pulse rifle.
And xenomorphs, xenomorphs and all that. So.
Yeah. And you see they also have the pulse rifle make an appearance too, which is like,
yeah.
You know, so I was like, okay. So.
The gun from Halo.
Yeah. Literally the gun from Halo. Literally all of Halo's arsenal is just the alien, you know, the Colonial Marine stuff with the serial numbers filed off.
Yeah. And yeah, that is out. When is that? That's August 16th.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. To be fair, though, part of the reason they probably use the arsenal from Alien, from the Colonial Marines and Aliens, is because, let's be honest, the prop designers in Aliens did a goddamn amazing job because all the shit actually looks functional.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not like crazy out there like the stuff in Star Wars is. So, you know, or even Star Trek for that matter. So, yeah. Anyway, we also got a teaser trailer for Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, the sequel to the original Beetlejuice.
Yeah. Looks like it could be really good.
Yeah.
It actually have a lot of the people back.
Yeah, a lot of them. Except for one guy, and there's a very good reason why he's not there.
Yeah. They got Winona Ryder as Lydia.
Yep.
Yeah, Catherine O'Hara's Delia.
Yeah, her mother.
And they got
Jenna Ortega.
Yeah, Jenna Ortega's Lydia's daughter, Astrid.
Because, of course, let's be honest, if Lydia was going to have a daughter, it was going to be Jenna Ortega.
Yes. Yeah.
There's just, it writes itself.
I mean, they both played the same character in The Addams Family.
Yep.
So.
And they both give off the same vibe, too.
Yeah.
That, you know, during that point in their careers. So.
Which is funny for Winona Ryder because she's now the mom from Stranger Things. That's her vibes that she's had for the last like 6 or 7 years. Now she has get back into looking like Lydia did.
Yeah.
Where it's I think she would have maybe not had the same haircut and all that, you know, 30 years later. But
it's like, but then again, this is a Tim Burton movie. So,
yeah.
It at least in Burton logic, it kind of makes sense.
Yeah, now Michael Keaton probably doesn't have to wear as much of a wig this time.
No.
Because he's gone balding, so.
Yeah. But, and he still fucking nailed it.
Yeah. And you don't really notice how old he is until they get real close to him.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, the makeup's not doing that much for him.
Well, I mean, to be fair, Beetlejuice was never a handsome gentleman to begin with. He was supposed to look grimy and crusty.
Oh, yeah, but he also has lots of wrinkles now, just from his natural face.
Yeah.
The way his face has changed over the years. But, yeah, that it's I guess they're also going to be doing more stop motion here.
Well, I mean, again. Tim Burton.
Yeah.
And if he can use practical effects, well, I'm going to say if he can use practical effects, let's be honest, the last bunch of big movies he did, he tried to overdo it with the CG and it didn't look really good.
Yeah.
So he's kind of going back to basics this time.
Yeah.
And let's be honest, part of the reason why that first movie has aged as well as it does is because they rely on all the practical effects.
Yeah. They just get weird with it.
Yeah. I mean, it's Tim Burton. That's kind of his whole MO. Burton, what do we do? Let's get weird with it.
Yeah, though he also takes credit for other people getting weird with it, too.
Yeah.
Which is the Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yeah, well, because he was the producer. Yeah.
But you don't know who the director is because he's
siphoned
off all the creative naming vibes off of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's it. And this will be out September 6th, so not too far away.
Yeah. Please be good. You know, I'm asking.
Yeah. I mean, Willem Dafoe's in it, so if you need a weird person, there you go.
Yeah. Yeah, there we go. He's
king of the weird people.
Yep. And last but not least, we got a teaser trailer for Max's The Penguin.
Yeah, looks like it could be neat.
Yeah.
Letting the Penguin kind of get his own thing. Probably not having much Batman in here, just be more of a crime thriller kind of thing to it.
Yeah.
Let Colin Farrell kind of chew up scenery here.
Yeah.
So yeah, that'll be out this fall. I don't know if they have a date for it just yet.
Mm-hmm.
No, just the fall. So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I do believe with that, we've got ourselves a show, folks. Yes, we do. We have got ourselves a show. So with that, I would like to remind all of our listeners, you got a question, comment, something you want us to read on the air, you can get in contact with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got a link for you in the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, archive.org, or pretty much any kind of podcast aggregator you could possibly think of. Much like the pollen that is, you know, infecting and infesting the inside of my nostrils, we are inevitable. You will see us eventually. But anyway, so we're going to go ahead and wind things down here. Thank you once again, Chris, for joining me on this. And if you have liked what you heard, please do not hesitate to share us with your friends, your family, your coworkers, your casual acquaintances, your mortal enemies, and everybody in between. And because, you know, they may hate you, but they may end up liking us. And, you know, we're not in the splash zone, so why should we care? But yeah, we're going to go ahead and end it there. Tune in next week. Hopefully, we'll have another show for you with hopefully even better news, which is something I say almost every week, and I always end up getting disappointed. So, never have dreams, kids. Dreams are for fools. Good night.